Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. And I tell you what, the first things first, I should have gotten Jake's the pronunciation of his last name beforehand. It's Stachowiak.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stachowiak, as and not what I was pronouncing before Stachowiak. And so, well, thanks for coming, even though I mispronounced your name here.
Well, with a name like that, you can't. You got to live with it.
It's spelled like Stachowiak, but it's Stachowiak. And yeah, I should have known. I should have at least had enough sense to check it out beforehand. Well, great to have you with us. You're a kayaker instruction. And by the way, I would bet that Jake's going to be very happy to talk about kayaking, about kayaks. Believe me, he's used practically every kayak there is, I think, in the world.
heavy on the sea kayaking side, not so much the whitewater, though.
Heavy on that side. But if you have questions about kayaking, getting involved, getting started, or maybe you're already been doing a lot of it already and have some questions or comments for Jake, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Jake Stachowiak is a 35-year-old native of Wausau, kayak instructor. He's also a carpenter. He's set out just over a year ago, mm-hmm. wasn't it, on an epic paddling journey. 5,000 miles?
It ended up being 5,740 when it was all done.
What possessed you?
I'm still trying to figure that out. That's everybody's number one question, and yours too. I thought I'd figure it out during the trip, but just to see what was out there. Unending curiosity of what's around the next bend, I guess.
Are there a lot of people from Wausau like you out there?
I think there must be.
Well, all right. Describe the route that you took.
It started out,
and we'll talk about some of the. Give us the generality. You know, the general trip. You started in Wausau, or
actually no. The name. The trip had a name. I call it the Portage to Portage Paddling Project.
Yeah.
It started in Portage, Wisconsin, and looped around the eastern United States, ending in Portage, Wisconsin, by way of first the Wisconsin River, Mississippi River, Gulf Coast, around the tip of Florida, up the East Coast, up the Hudson River out of New York City, across the Erie Canal System, into Lake Erie, along Lake Huron, the upper part of Lake Michigan, and then the Fox River from Green Bay back to Portage, right where I started. So that's kind of why Portage got its name, I guess.
Well, this was no spur of the moment trip.
In a way, it was. Yeah, I got the idea. I discovered the route myself when I was about 12 or 13 years old studying Wisconsin trout fishing regulations. All the trout streams are highlighted in different colors, and I realized that the river's almost touched in Portage, and investigated a little further and discovered, oh my gosh, you could do this loop by some watercraft. It wasn't until later that I got into kayaking and discovered a boat that could do it. And then for the actual planning of the trip, started 7 years ago and quickly ended after I kind of convinced myself I couldn't do it, and I don't know why. And then the actual finally I'm going to do it planning was about 2.5 months only. So
that's not a lot of time.
No, I probably should have taken more time. But yeah.
So you you did. I know you were trying various kayaks out along.
Yeah, well, I worked at a kayak shop. Aqua Adventures out in San Diego, California, and we had loads and loads of boats, and nobody knew it. So I got this gimmicky idea to blog about do boat review every day for 100 days straight, but it had to be a different boat, and it ultimately became different paddle craft, stand up paddleboard, canoe, or kayak. And so 100 days straight, at least 1 hour, I would go out and paddle something different, and that was the summer before I started my trip. So. Yeah.
So that was kind of getting you, well, you were in shape anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah. People ask me, what did you do to get in shape for the trip? And I literally stopped paddling the 2 months before the trip to let my body rest up from all the boating I'd been doing. So it sounds counterintuitive, but I needed to let my body heal a little before I started abusing it, really.
So, yeah. So, and you had to be going against you were with the flow.
Yeah. Aside from the cold of a late, early winter start, it was, you know, it was with the current for 1,600 miles as the trip started. So that was a good soft start, I guess.
Well, let me give that number again. If you'd like to join in, have a question for Jake Stachowiak as we talk about he's a kayaking instructor, a carpenter, completed a 5,000-mile kayak trip circumventing the eastern portion of the United States. So it's great to have him with us, and we can talk about the trip itself. We can just talk about kayaking in general with him as we visit along. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. So you went on your own on this?
Yeah, by definition, it was a solo trip, but I had a website and blog going, an online journal going throughout the whole trip, and through that, I invited people to join me as much as possible. I wanted to connect with the people on the route, I paddled with dozens and dozens of people and got to go home for a meal and a hot shower with dozens more, so it was great. I met a lot of people.
So that was that a highlight for you?
Yeah, I think connecting with the people all along the way was definitely one of the highlights, one of the many. It was unusual, I think, for people to go through the effort to do that on a trip of that magnitude, but it meant a lot to me. And it was sort of one of the messages of the trip, if I needed one, you know, one of the slogans of the trip was, "We're linked by water." I even made T-shirts that had that slogan on it. And I just wanted to show that geographically we're linked by water, and maybe, you know, in the spirit of the sport, we were also linked by water. So it went over well, I think.
So what did you plan for in terms of, and before we go to the phones, I'm wondering, did you have a big budget for this, or?
I had a few $1,000s saved up and sold the T-shirts to raise a bit more money. I'd heard from people walking the Appalachian Trail, which was one of the nearest comparisons of a long-distance venture, and I'd heard numbers, you know, figure on a dollar a mile, and nowadays probably more like $2 a mile. So I went with that number, figuring $2 a mile, 5,000 miles, I might need 10 grand. And it was thankfully less than that, much less than that. And, everybody helping me out financially was a huge boost.
And meals and so forth along the way.
At least once a week, people would take me home and feed me. So thanks, everybody.
Oh, that's great. Well, we have some callers online, and I want to go to Gil in Wind Lake first. Gil, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. Hi, Jake. Hey, just a question. I'm somewhat new to kayaking, and I'm just curious on your testing of kayaks. I'd like to get into kayak fishing. I was wondering if you have any advice or comments on equipment that's kind of geared towards kayak fishing.
It's funny, as I haven't kayak fished much myself. There's a whole bunch of boats designed specifically for kayak fishing, a bunch of different brands, and I think the best thing to do is just go to a local shop, if there are in your area, and talk to the people there and you know, get their opinions and stuff firsthand. You can read specs and such online and in catalogs all day long, but the best thing to do is talk to people firsthand and demo the boat if you can.
What are the kinds of things you would look for in a kayak for?
For kayak fishing, generally you're looking for a sit-on-top kayak. It's a little wider and more stable, so you can, you know, not work on balancing the whole time you're trying to fish. Other things, you know, the length of the boat to give you a little more speed if you want to get to the fish faster, shorter if you want it to be a little more portable. It's a bunch of parameters that you look at.
Thanks, Gil, for calling. Jamie in Wausau, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I got a question for your guest. I'm wondering if you had any experience with inflatable kayaks. I had a chance to try one last summer, a prototype device. I wonder if you had any experience with other kinds of kayaks that are an inflatable design.
The only inflatable design I used was one we sold at the kayak shop out west. The brand is slipping my mind. It was a decent boat. It's always a huge trade-off with inflatables versus hard shell craft. In the portability is wonderful, but you lose performance because they tend to be much more flexible, of course, than a hard shell boat. Therefore slower and less maneuverable. But if portability and storage capacity is a concern, then inflatables are the way to go.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And lots of other callers online as well. Jake Stachowiak, 35-year-old native of Wausau, kayak instructor, carpenter. He journeyed 5,000 miles circumventing the eastern portion of the United States in a kayak. And I got to ask him, what kayak, what did you use on your trip?
I used a 17-foot fiberglass Kevlar sea kayak made by Seda Kayaks out of San Diego, 22 inches wide.
Oh, man. Well, we'll get into some more of that right after we take a look at the news here. Coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're zeroing in on kayaking today as I'm broadcasting from our Wausau studios, Wisconsin Public Radio studios on the Marathon County campus in Wausau. Jake Stachowiak is our guest, native of Wausau. He kayaking instructor, and he paddled. One of the reasons we're having him on is because he paddled 5,000 miles, circumvented the entire eastern portion of the United States, started in Portage and ended there, all by kayak. Great to have him along. Certainly to answer your questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And before we get to the phones, because I'm in Wausau, I really like Wausau. It's a wonderful place. And Wisconsin Hometown Stories, Wausau, premieres January 4th. There's two free public screening events on January 19th in Wausau. Wisconsin Public Television will be presenting the premiere broadcast of Wisconsin Hometown Stories at 8 p.m. on Monday, January 24th. It's the fifth in a series of documentaries featuring the history of Wisconsin communities, and there will be two free community screenings that will take place in Wausau at 2 and 7:30 on Wednesday, January 19th at the Grand Theater. So a chance for the folks from you who are in the Wausau area or in Wausau to come and see what Wisconsin Public Television has done. But for now, you can see what you can learn about kayaking as we visit with Jake Stachowiak. And Tanner in Wisconsin Rapids has been waiting a long time to visit with you. So let's go to Tanner. Hi, Tanner. Thank you for waiting.
Thanks for having me. I had a couple questions.
Sure.
Me and my brother are both very we love outdoors. We love doing things outdoors. We love mountain biking and skiing, and lately we've been trying to get into kayaking. And my question is, what's the best way to go about getting into it? Is it better to buy a cheaper kayak of lesser quality, or to go ahead and bite the bullet, per se, and get a higher-end kayak that would maybe last us longer?
What kind of kayaking are you interested in doing? Rivers or...?
Well, I have grandparents that live on Lake Superior up in Ashland, and I thought that it'd be great to start doing more, like, going out to visit the Fossil Islands and seeing the sea caves.
Okay, so yeah. Big lake, big water kayaking.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't matter white water or sea kayaking or whatever, or any outdoor sport for that matter. It's a fantastic question. I worked in the kayak shop, and nothing bothered us more because we know our stuff out there at Aqua Adventures, and nothing bothered us more than people who would get into a bad boat, so to speak, a really inexpensive, well, cheap boat, and they wouldn't enjoy the sport because the gear was inhibiting their growth and progression in the sport. So I do recommend, in any sport for that matter, bicycling or kayaking, whitewater sea kayaking, get adequate gear, get good gear that you can, as much as you can afford. Don't skimp out because you run a really huge risk of not enjoying yourself. And in paddle sports, I used to be too cool or think I was too good for lessons until I got into kayaking. And I tell people it's not hard, it's just not obvious. So definitely get instruction very early on. And that, and then demo as many boats as you can as you're shopping for boats. And that way, as you're demoing, you're not learning as you're going. You kind of already have some skills as you're discovering which boat works for you.
Oh, so you're saying get the lessons first.
Early on, yeah. Yeah, because so often people go in, and of course you feel tippy the first days in a kayak. And so that those first couple of boats you may demo as you're getting used to the tippiness of a boat, they're going to, in your mind, they're going to register as unstable, and of course the boats you paddle later on are going to feel more and more stable, not necessarily because they are, but because you are becoming more comfortable. So, so get the instruction early on, and then try out boats, and don't skimp. Try to get as much, you know, as much gear as you can afford.
There you go, Tanner. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Eric in Richland Center next. Hi, Eric. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Hi, Jake. I just had a couple quick questions also. I wondered if you'd elaborate just a bit more. I know you said you used a 17-foot Kevlar boat, I believe you said. Wondering if you'd elaborate a bit on your choice there. And then I don't know if you covered this. I came into your show a bit late, but how did you store all your gear on this particular trip? And is there any place that you've published any info on that trip that we could take a look at, or if you know of books or internet sites where there is similar info on long trips like this?
Yeah, that's good questions there.
Yeah, it's kind of a series of questions. The first, the boat was a Seda Akuma, an expedition sea kayak. Well, a sea kayak. We made an expedition kayak. It's designed with hatches front and rear to store your gear. So that's where my gear went. Boat and gear combined weighed about 200 pounds. Boat itself weighed about 65 pounds. It was a hybrid. It wasn't all Kevlar. The hull was Kevlar, and the deck was fiberglass. It had a foam core reinforcement, a lot of beta that might confuse a lot of people, but it was a pretty serious boat. It was a production boat, but it was customized for me with some custom-placed bulkheads and such to gain some extra storage, a little extra foam reinforcement, knowing that I'd be abusing it. I do have a website going that it was during the trip. It was a link to my blog to share the daily account, which I did do carrying a laptop with me and a cell phone uplink to the internet. And that I'm trying to evolve into a source, a resource for people who'd want to do a trip similar to mine, legs of my trip or, you know, just get ideas for their own trip. So on that website already, there's a pretty good, I'd like to think, a pretty good equipment list that I put together, kind of showing the gear in its dry bags, in the arrangement it would be in the boat, and then chronicling some of the gear. I want to try to, you know, improve that as I go here, but of course finding time is a challenge. There are lots of resources for kayaking, not a lot on long-distance expedition kayaking, so... I even myself, I didn't know what I was going to be eating until a week before the trip. My sister-in-law bought me a bunch of Lipton rice meals that I became a staple. But yeah, and don't hesitate through the website. Can I share the website?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's portage2portage.com. And on there, there's a talk to Jake. I've been updating it. I used to beg for free meals and a warm bed to sleep in, but now I'm inviting people to email me. Feel free to email me, and I'll answer any questions you have about what boat and such. A lot of the questions, I'm kind of feeling bad. I can't answer them as deeply as they should be answered on the radio.
So it's, again, the website is?
Portage2portage.com.
Portage2portage.com. And did we get all of your questions?
Was that all the questions?
Eric, did we get all of your questions?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much for that.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. We have another caller online here, Brian in Underhill. Brian, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, I was curious about the literature that he would have read before going on the trip, and it sounds like he started to touch on that just now. But there is, in fact, a large literature, at least in the canoeing realm, for long-distance paddling. I'm thinking of Verlin Kruger, many books about people going down the Mississippi River. And whether it's kayaking or canoeing, I would argue it's pretty much all the same once you're out there. You know, it's food, it's the people you meet, the situations you encounter, the other river traffic and so forth. So I'm just wondering if he was aware of that literature, if he had found, you know, what he had found useful in it. And that's my question.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian.
Good good question. Verlin Kruger, if you're into paddle sports at all, maybe if you're not yet, you need to know about Verlin Kruger. He made my trip look like a warm-up. I did the bunny hill route of what he's done in a canoe, a specially designed canoe that he designed. I did read Verlin Kruger's biography, and then Valerie Fons's book, who partnered up with him on Legs of His Journeys. And also, you can't paddle in San Diego without knowing about Ed Gillette and hearing the tales, the legends of the paddles he did crossing the Pacific Ocean from Monterey, California, I believe it was Monterey, to Hawaii in a tandem kayak. I think the center bulkhead was cut out so he could lay down inside the boat and get some rest. But it was definitely Verlin Kruger. And what I gained from reading about him was, that it could be done by a mortal person, I guess, a long trip. And it's one of the messages I give in this, when I talk to people is don't ist yourself out of an idea. And isting, I mean, don't not do it because you're not the first or the biggest or the fastest, all the ists that people put on things. Just do it because you want to do it. And Verlin, I don't think he did things because he was the first or the oldest or whatever. I think he just did it because he had the love of the sport and the adventure. So that's what I gained from reading about him.
Oh, that's wonderful. And his longest trip was...
Oh, jeez. 15,000 miles? I don't know right offhand. Read about Verlin if you want to be inspired.
Verlin Kruger.
Kruger? Kruger?
Kruger?
Yeah, from
Kruger.
I think so. Forgive me. Yeah.
Okay.
I should know. Yeah.
Brian, thank you again for calling. Let's talk to another Brian. Brian in Glidden, Wisconsin. Hi, Brian.
Hi. My daughter came up, and she was having a visit, and we decided to go kayaking on Lake Superior, take her out to the sea caves. Are you familiar with that?
Growing up in Wisconsin, I didn't get into kayaking until I moved to Florida after college. But, of course, I've read about the sea caves, the Apostle Islands and such. And sea caves, most of the ones I'm familiar with are in Mexico and in Southern California. But fantastic experience going in sea caves. You have to exercise caution, go on calm days, and never go in a cave that has a wet ceiling, which is an indication that the wave has been there previous. It's fantastic paddling, beautiful.
Brian?
Offshore.
Oh. I'm sorry.
And a big wave came by and flipped her over. And we kind of had difficulty, and I was just wondering how to flip back over.
Oh. Yeah.
And if your kayak flips, how do you flip back over?
That is one of the main reasons to take kayaking lessons right there, the safety factors. It's not incredibly easy to get back in your boat, especially solo and in rough water. Even assisting somebody can be tricky. In a nutshell, hold on tight and help the person get back in. Keep your weight low so that your center of gravity is low so it's easier to get back in. But definitely get instruction about how to do that, especially if you're considering going offshore in rougher water. I cringe thinking of how many people venture offshore not knowing that stuff and truly believing that they'll never flip over. We have people come in the kayak shop saying, I've been paddling 20 years and never tipped over. And it's,
you look at them and say,
sooner or later, you're going to get caught.
Sooner.
The saying in the kayaking world is everybody's between swims, and this is the truth.
Did you, on your 5,000-mile trip, did you ever have a spot where you flipped over?
Never accidentally. I did deliberately to roll and to cool off and such, but never accidentally. a fully loaded sea kayak is very stable. The weight in the boat acts like ballast, and you can ride out a lot of rough stuff.
And what's the coolest? I mean, you're so low in the water. That's got to be one of the really cool things. I mean, at least when I've done it.
It is. It's a different perspective. It puts you, I don't know, it makes me feel more like part of the water, I guess. But yeah, I know I've gotten into a little bit of stand-up paddling, and your perspective goes from 2 feet off the water to, 5 feet off the water, and suddenly you're looking down at the same things you've been looking up at. And of course, you can't see all that far, and the horizon's, just a couple miles away, so...
Yeah, and the stand-up, again, has gotten to be, that's kind of an in thing, or is a little popularity there.
Yeah, it is. If you don't know what it is, it's essentially giant surfboards with 6-foot paddles that you stand up and paddle around. I thought it was ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous when I first saw it until I tried it. And I figured I'd give it a 20-minute try to say I did it, but I didn't come back for 2 hours. I had so much fun. Yeah.
Well, here's Joel from Rock Island, Illinois, who wonders how many $2 ice cream cones you ate on your trip.
Joe and Joe from Rock Island, nearly the last people to host me on the trip, actually. I had to close up a gap. I got snowed out from such a late start, and Joe and Joe helped me out. So,
So you ate a few ice cream.
Yeah, they treated me to an ice cream. In New York State, I found Baldwinsville, I think it was. I walked into the town and got an ice cream cone. It was a giant ice cream cone for only $2, and cheap food was a blessing on my trip. And so when I hooked up with them, they had to take me out for a good ice cream cone. It was fantastic.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Joe.
And Joe and Joe, if you're listening, we haven't found the fish yet. We found a bunch of little ones, but no big ones yet. So I'll give you a call when I find them. So.
Oh, you're looking for some big fish for them, huh?
Well, yeah, some action if we can get it. We found a lot of hammer handles on the Eau Claire the other day, but nothing big yet.
Okay. All right, so we've got AJ and Nasita who has a comment or question. Well, I think we just lost him. We just lost AJ. So we will go to Ken in Kansasville next. Ken, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jake. I was wondering about, if you could tell me a little bit about how much gear you stored you could take in a sea kayak and what you did take that you thought was most important and how you dressed. The varying weather conditions.
Yeah, the most important piece of gear is what I wore, my life jacket. Yeah. All kayak instructors wait for their chance to preach that lesson. But as far as just day in and day out gear, I have to say, gosh, I think my synthetic down jacket actually is one piece of gear I took with me throughout the trip. It acted as a pillow at night and kept me warm during the day. And then I fell in love with that jacket, a North Face synthetic Dell jacket. It was great. As far as what I carried, I carried enough food and gear for about 10 days. A sleeping bag, tent, sleeping mat, a change of camp clothes, and cooking gear and such. As simple as I could keep it, one pot, one spoon to cook with. And then, of course, flare gun, VHF radio, water dye, a bunch of safety gear like that. And then as far as what I wore and such, in the cold weather parts, especially when I first started in early December last year, it was a dry suit with thermals underneath. And then that switched to paddling jackets and paddling pants until finally the summer month came, and it was just rash guard type shirts and swim trunks. So I did actually, people preach wear shoes, always wear shoes when you're paddling. And gosh, here I am on the radio saying I actually ended up not wearing shoes later on because my shoes themselves, being in them all day, every day, started wearing my feet out, giving me blisters. So I went barefoot, let my feet breathe.
So you can do that.
Yeah, you can get away with it with caution. And for other reasons, if your gear is, if something is done one way but it's not working for you, then you should reconsider and always analyze what your system's doing for you.
Thanks again, Ken, for calling. Mark in Waukesha, let's turn to you next. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Question for Jake. I've been kayaking for a few years and never really feel quite comfortable, I guess because I've never really learned to roll or to, wet exit and get back in. But anyways, as I've gotten older, I've been looking at the pontoons that mount on the sides of kayaks. And I was wondering if Jake had any experience with those, and I'm particularly interested in them for doing some kayak fishing.
Yeah, we had a pair come through the kayak store I work for. I never actually tried them out myself, but kayak fishing is definitely probably the most common place to see them used nowadays. Sponsons or pontoons that you can extend out from your boat to stabilize you. Time in the boat will always make you feel more stable. And if you've been at it for years and are still feeling tippy, you may be just in the wrong boat. That's while you're underway. Of course, when you're parked and fishing, more stability still makes you more comfortable, so you can concentrate on fishing.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Mark, for calling. Larry in Wisconsin wonders how far offshore did you go on the Atlantic?
It's funny. On the Atlantic, I actually was on the intracoastal. Inshore, behind the barrier islands, it's an interconnected series mm-hmm. of bays and inland rivers that shelters, well, originally it was made to shelter barge traffic. Now yachts and such use it, and I was happy to use it myself.
Why not? And that was the other thing I wondered. You know, you're in a kayak. Did you have close calls with boats or sailboats or ships or anything like that?
Never really. I've been boating, kayaking so long, and I've learned to really read, you know where boats are going to be going and avoid them myself. And it's just like I liken it to walking down the street. You wouldn't walk down the middle of Main Street. You'd walk on the sidewalk. So as a kayak, you can paddle along the sides of boat channels where boats can't go. It's too shallow for them. So it's easy
sure.
to avoid boats. I witnessed one very close call on the Erie Canal. Two other kayakers crossing the canal in front of me and a companion, and right in front of three yachts that were coming. And they can't stop on a dime. And it scared the two of us. And I actually kind of chastised those two kayakers for making us all look bad. adhere to the rules of the road, and you should fare well out there.
The other thing I was remembering was a story that someone told me about being out on the Mississippi and fog dropped down suddenly, and they didn't know where suddenly mm-hmm. they had no perspective as to which way to go, and then they hear a fog horn from a ship.
Mm-hmm. I had two fog encounters on the Mississippi. One, I left the town, and it's amazing what you can convince your mind of which direction you're headed, and I was convinced a buoy was laying upstream instead of downstream, as you normally push downstream. And what I was actually doing was paddling upstream. And I had convinced myself that the buoy was on the wrong side of the river and somehow tipped upstream. And I was just going the wrong way. And I crossed back across the river, and minutes later, a barge went by. And so I'd essentially crossed right in front of a barge. And unknowingly, it was just foggy.
Oh.
I finally just took a break and let the fog clear a bit. And another day, the river was a mile wide, and I could stay well out of the boating or the shipping lanes. And I was navigating the fog. But that's interesting on the Mississippi because of the wing dams that deflect the current to the main channel. And so you have to be very aware of these rock wing dams so you don't run those over. So it's interesting.
What AJ and Nasita, I was wondering which kayak you would recommend sit in or sit out?
It completely depends on what you want to do. Sit on top or sit outside, sit out kayaks, I guess you could call it that, tend to be more stable. In the beginning, you feel more stable and more secure on the boat. And they're easy to snorkel off of, to scuba dive off of course, fish off of. Very, very beginner friendly. They tend to be slow. It's kind of a trade-off. You have a slower, less efficient boat than a sit-inside boat would have. A sit-inside boat initially feels more tippy because it's generally narrower, but you have a better body connection. So ultimately, you will, with applying a little skill, you will be more stable, more seaworthy in a sit-inside boat. You just have to consider what you want to do with the boat. This always should be the first question a person in a kayak shop should ask. What do you want to do? And steer you towards the appropriate boat.
Jake, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much. The time flew by.
Yeah,
I want to remind everybody, your website, portage2portage.com.
Exactly. Yep. And feel free to call or email with any questions you have.
Well, it's been a great joy. Thank you again so much for being with us today.
You bet.
Jake Stachowiak, native of Wausau, kayaked 5,000 miles on a trip. It sounds like a fascinating trip. And he's a good guy, too, and knows a lot about kayaking. So it was great to have him with us today. Big thanks to Rachel Owens and Dave Potratz and Rick Ryer for all their help for this program in Wausau today. And thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.